Welcome, everyone, to Liberty Talk Radio, formerly Star of the Beast Network. Liberty Talk Radio is your independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday, December 3rd, 2006. It is now about 8:32 p.m. Central Time. And it's being sponsored by Ranch Acres Audiology in Tulsa. Call 918-749-7711 for all your hearing needs. Ranch Acres Audiology, where hearing is fashionable. We also dedicate our broadcast to the Peace House Tulsa, a nonprofit organization promoting justice through education and nonviolent action. Go to their website, www.peacehousetulsa.org, and please support that fine organization. Ladies and gentlemen, this station is your antidote to popular talk radio, regardless of political affiliation, where you are expected to do more than listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, Rome, Paris, or Stalingrad. Folks, we must take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. It's time to shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. You may reach us during this broadcast via Skype, internet radio. Just dial Star of the Beast, lowercase, Star of the Beast, or our regular telephone now at 918-447-1776, and our operators will be waiting to take your questions. Otherwise, please email us at comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. We will respond to your questions during our next broadcast. And now on to today's broadcast. Good evening, everyone. It is my pleasure this evening to introduce Dr. Kirby R. Cundiff, who is an associate professor of finance at Northeastern State University in Broken Arrow. He has a PhD in theoretical physics and an MS in finance from the University of Illinois, and is a chartered financial analyst. One of his articles on healthcare was published in the March 2000 issue of The Freeman, and that's the publication of The Foundation of Economic Education, a very, very fine publication at that. Kirby, good evening, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Joe.
Kirby, you want to speak up a little bit?
Sure, do my best.
Okay, good. You can get close to the mic. It will not bite you.
All right.
At least we haven't had any incidents yet. Thank you. I know Sunday evening is a time where we'd like to just sit back, kick back, relax, and maybe watch the last football game of the week, and you've taken your time out. I want to thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome, Joe.
Kirby, you gave me your research papers on the economics of healthcare and life expectancy, and another one on the economics and American healthcare. And I was quite surprised at some of the conclusions. For the benefit of our radio audience, could you give us some background on the American healthcare system and how we got to where we are today?
Sure. Healthcare, the way we pay for it, is pretty unique. If you go into a grocery store and buy food, you just pay them, you get the food. A very simple transaction. If you want to get healthcare, well, you have to go to a doctor. Commonly, you'll have insurance provided by an employer. You'll pay a copayment up front. Later on, well, you may get other bills following two or three for various different services. So the question is, why did healthcare end up with a structure so much different than the way we pay for other services in our economy? And a lot of that dates back to the systems that developed in the United States during World War II. One of the major things was during World War II, the federal government, to keep costs low for the war, put on wage and price controls. So it was illegal for businesses to raise the salaries of their employees, and the businesses decided to come up with other ideas, ways of attracting people, and that's how we came up with this concept of the benefit. And one of the benefits they started offering was healthcare. So your employer, instead of just paying you more money, since that was illegal, would start giving you a healthcare service. After the war, Congress realized that, hey, this is a form of compensation. They looked into taxing it. The people who were used to getting this tax-free benefit protested, and then as a result, it was put into law that employees could do this. So we had a structure that was set up, so if you and I go out and buy health insurance, well, we have to pay for that with post-tax dollars. If our employer buys health insurance for us, that's pre-tax dollars. So that's a 30% cost up front. It gives you an incentive not to buy your own health care, but have the employer do it. And of course, if your employer buys your health care, there's a lot less incentive for you to shop around on price for services. So there's less incentives for you to look at cheaper doctors, cheaper services, etc. So that's one of the things that started to push up costs in health care. And then the other big thing in the 60s, the creation of Medicare and Medicaid. Well, effectively, what the government did with that is they started subsidizing demand for healthcare, massive subsidies for demand for healthcare. But of course, they didn't create any new hospitals, any new doctors, any new healthcare resources. So basic economics, you start subsidizing demand, supply doesn't go up, of course, costs go up.
It seems that our system, and I'm getting close to the point where I in the next couple of years, I may be applying for Medicare, which scares the heck out of me because I don't consider myself much older than 15. And I've been reading articles on it. Everything is so confusing. It seems that we have a system that doesn't fit anything, doesn't fit any particular paradigm at all. Is that true? Did we just take one part and then patch it with another part? And is much of this politically motivated, or how did all this take part? I mean, after the ball start rolling, why did all this take place?
It's certainly a bureaucratic mess. I mean, you've got lots of different organizations that make lots of money off of the healthcare system, and certainly the people getting the services probably aren't that happy with it. And at this point, of course, a lot of the people making the money, the medical doctors, well, they're very well compensated, are probably pretty displeased with all the bureaucracy too. Again, I've gone through the origins from the 60s. Other areas where things like this come up is not only do we have government subsidizing demand in this really weird hodgepodge system where you have Medicare, Medicaid, all the different private insurance groups, well, you also have a hodgepodge of restrictions of supply. For example, the AMA for years and years and years is always claiming there's a doctor glut, there's too many doctors, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the average physician still makes around $200,000 a year. Admittedly, in inflation-adjusted salaries, that is down from around 1970 when they made $300,000 a year. But there is no doctor glut, and they've done their best to restrict the per capita number of doctors in the U.S., which is much, much lower, like a third lower than the number of physicians in Europe. Another restriction of supply, there are these things called CON programs. CON's probably appropriate, Certificate of Need programs. It's illegal in most states to supply a hospital bed without the state's permission. And the argument is they don't want you to, quote, duplicate services because supposedly duplicating services increase costs. And I'm sure people who own a 7-Eleven would like to make that argument. Well, we don't want another one across
that's
the
right.
street.
Too much. Yeah, more, yeah. The more competition, the more the cost goes up, right? Is that that's the logic, right?
Yeah. So you have lots of different organizations. You know, obviously the American people want more health care. Various groups are lobbying to make more money off the system. And you've just got a hodgepodge of legislation that results from that in a very messy system.
Mm. Well, the health care obviously is a concern of just about everyone, well, maybe with the exception of the super wealthy. I have a health care plan, and every year I dread opening the envelope, advising me whether or not they are still going to be in the health care business. And if they do and they drop me, I'm going to be in big trouble. And then if they are in, what the cost will be. It just seems to be a very bureaucratic, paper-driven system, which doesn't seem to have much logic to it. There seems to be no direct connection between the patient and the doctor. There are so many speed bumps in between, and some of those speed bumps are more like brick walls. Is that what we've built over the years?
That's certainly my perception. I mean, a system far more like just going to the grocery store or going to a car mechanic would be far, far better, where you just in generally pay for the service and receive it. The way the tax code structure, the incentive is to avoid that. So if we could somehow get back to a fee-for-service system, normally in most industries, you only buy insurance for catastrophic problems. If you wreck your car, you don't buy insurance that covers oil changes. And effectively in healthcare, we buy insurance that covers oil changes, which involves a lot more bureaucracy and a lot more paperwork. But the tax code's set up to, you know, create things that way. That's the incentive.
Yeah, you know, I would much rather just pay as I go.
Yeah.
But know that in the event that something occurs, and of course hopefully the event would be unlikely, then I know I have insurance. Just like I don't have insurance for my house if someone, for the kid across the street, breaks the window. But if the tree falls on the roof and cracks the house in half, I will have insurance for that. We don't have a system like that. It also seems, after reading your paper, that we have, everyone's the culprit. We have the pharmaceutical companies are the culprit. The AMA is the culprit.
Yep.
The government is the culprit.
Yep.
Unions are the culprit.
Yep.
And then, even to a certain extent, the patients are the culprit. Is there a good guy in our system at all?
That's a tough question. The organizations getting together all seem to have interacted in a way that damages everybody. Obviously, the individuals in many cases are the good guys. But it's hard to see somebody who's really out there advocating for a system that would work much better. I mean, there are organizations like Cato Institute, Foundation for Economic Education, that are making arguments, Independent Institute. The question would be, how do you get from here to there? Transition programs like HSAs, health savings accounts, might help a little bit. The advantage of those type systems, they're sort of like individual retirement accounts. You can stick money in them in a given year, and then you're allowed to spend that money on healthcare for whatever you want, and then you would just have, again, catastrophic insurance like you're advocating. The problem with them, again, is they're very bureaucratic. You spend the money, you got to figure out how to get your money back out of the account, and you still don't have a system where you just go and pay, because you've got to always justify to the agency that sets up the HSA, the insurance company, and then therefore the government, that these expenses are done for approved healthcare needs.
You know, when I hear this, I've been reading Michael Bachnerik's book on It's Good to Be King. It's Great to Be King, I think it's called. And I said, whatever happened to our freedom? Everything seems to have a catch to it, a limitation, some sort of, anyway. And I don't think the public really understands. They look at our healthcare system as a healthcare system problem. It's really a problem with our system, with our freedoms and our rights as well. But we won't get on that right now, because we'll be here all night if we start chatting about that. With the changeover in Congress, I suspect we're going to hear more rumblings regarding universal health care in the United States. Now, I know for a fact that universal health care is not working in Canada. I was in Canada, and if you go there and you turn the TV on, you'll find on the news that they're talking about, how do we get out of this mess that we're in? We've got to privatize this sucker. And it's kind of interesting to hear that. I was in Montreal recently where I heard that. Could the United States have a universal health care system, or is our current system so gobbledygook, so confusing, so large, so bureaucratic, that by creating a one-payer system may not even simplify things? You have any idea on that?
I'm certainly against it. The Canadian system, there's a quote in one of those papers from one of the Supreme Court justices about the delays being so long that people are dying on waiting lists. Now, in places like Canada and Great Britain, another interesting thing to look at is the availability of healthcare resources. Those countries have fewer resources than we do. Now, arguments for universal healthcare, there are arguments that they seem to have less bureaucracy, which is hard to imagine from government, but with our hodgepodge system, it's estimated that maybe 30% of expenditures go to bureaucracy. supposedly they have it down to 5%. But the main problem in that area would be restrictions on supply. So I don't really see in the U.S., I mean, you create some sort of a bureaucratic healthcare system. I know the Clinton system was designed basically to outlaw most small insurance companies, and then it would give monopolies in various parts of the country to a given insurance company to administer it. I don't really see how that could improve things any. It would probably have to make it worse. Now, it might cut costs, but then, you know, services at the same time would most likely go down. The main way to improve the system would be to increase supply of services. And that could be done, well, I guess two different ways. We've discussed about things like HSAs that might increase competition. And the other thing would be to increase simply supply of healthcare. The Europeans, again, Canada has fewer doctors than the U.S. I think so does Great Britain. Most of the European countries, continental, have maybe 30% more. Now, the AMA has done its best to restrict the supply of doctors, and they've done these anti-competitive practices. Clearly, we'd be better off with more doctors. Another thing to do, of course, the FDA has made it so the pharmaceutical company has a monopoly on producing pharmaceuticals in the U.S. A lot of those drugs are available in Europe 30 years before they are in the U.S. Why not allow people to import them?
With the clamoring of universal health care, is it possible to make a transition to an efficient one-payer system here in the United States, or will too many institutions have to relinquish too much?
I guess it, you know, clearly you would have opposition from a lot of the healthcare industry. The question would be, well, will they get paid more or less? Because clearly if you have a universal healthcare system where you'll say, okay, we'll give this much more money to the pharmaceutical industry, this much more to the doctors, and it's extremely expensive, then they're probably not going to protest. Mm. So, you know, what government usually does is it pays off the right people to get them to go along with the system. Mm. And then, of course, the taxpayers would end up paying even more money, so it's not going to reduce costs. Yeah.
There is I believe in the preamble of the Constitution says uses those words, yeah, for the general welfare, and a lot of people interpret those words as meaning that the government has the responsibility to provide for the general welfare, which means, you know, the poor and subsidizing everything and anything. Obviously, that was actually meant for public roads, for example, sure, common defense and stuff like that. I guess what bothers me from a libertarian point of view is that if we had a universal health care, what our listeners should understand is that the doctors would all become federal employees. Is that true?
Yes. In some sort of a convoluted system, it certainly seems like it would be true. We might have something like public education where there are state employees, but certainly it's going to be some system similar to that, which would probably not work well for healthcare at all.
Yeah. Well, there seems to be a freedom issue here, or a liberty issue. And I'm going to get on my high horse for a second, but once the government gets involved, if I, in fact, want to go to someone for health care, that's going to be illegal. I mean, outside the system.
Under certainly some of the systems, that's the case. Parts of Canada, private insurance itself is illegal. I think it's in Quebec. It's at least one of the provinces. So they can certainly set it up that way. And their argument is, well, if you allow private insurance, then, you know, that will push up costs because all the good doctors will go to the private insurance system, and then they won't be available in the other systems.
Basically, a one-payer system violates the basic tenets of economics.
Yes. And also, of course, it wouldn't be the best way of, quote, providing for the general welfare. Clearly, systems that are more free market-oriented, like the market for food, while food is more important to survival than healthcare, it's a lot more readily available. If we created a government-provided food system where everybody had universal food insurance, I'm sure a lot more people would starve to death.
Yeah. You know, it always, if it sounds good, run, right?
Yeah.
I was surprised to learn in your research paper that the availability of healthcare in Europe is actually more favorable than in the United States. And that surprised the heck out of me because they all have one-payer systems. And I thought people would be online and they would have the same problems they have in Canada. But apparently they do not. Could you explain that to our audience, please?
Yeah, in Canada and I think Britain, they, for whatever reason, have fewer healthcare resources. And again, this varies from country to country. I'm looking at Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development data, and they've got like per capita number of doctors, per capita number of nurses, per capita CT scanners, MRIs, acute care beds. And Canada has a lot less resources than we do. A lot of continental Europe seems to have a lot more. And my main guess for that is probably the U.S. has this convoluted system where it's partly government-controlled, partly private-controlled, and we have a lot of companies that are clearly pushing for restrictions on supply to keep profits up. And I know in the U.S., again, per capita doctor's salary is around $200,000 a year. If you go back before the creation of Medicare and Medicaid in the U.S., they were like $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year, correcting for inflation. And those are similar salaries to in Europe. So in Europe, you know, they may have different requirements for doctors, but they've clearly got a lot more doctors. And presumably then people would have at least access to those doctors. Those doctors are paid less, you know, the more basically supply and demand. If you have a lot more people in an industry, there's a lot more competition. Probably they're going to make less money. And, you know, people certainly wait in lines in those areas for healthcare. But every time I go to see a doctor, I wait for an hour. I would at least hope it's not the not the case there.
Well, the life expectancy in Europe is long higher than in the United States. And what is that attributed to?
Most of the countries in the OECD have longer life expectancies than the U.S. They do have more healthcare resources, but a big variable that sticks out is probably obesity. The U.S. has, you know, a huge obesity problem. Other things that it seems to be blamed on, like everybody's going after smokers. Smoking is certainly bad for you, but the U.S. has a lower smoking rate than any other country on there than Canada, so it can't be a major variable. Drinking, most of the other countries drink more than Americans, and interestingly, the countries that drink more seem to live longer, which sort of surprised me.
There's a positive correlation, yeah. I remember that.
I guess wine supposedly helps with the heart disease, so that's possible. I'd say most likely the main cause is the obesity rate. Yeah. Americans are very overweight.
It's probably unlikely that we will gravitate to a free open market system. I mean, we're going in the opposite direction, further and further and further. And I guess I include the Europeans here. The European countries are in debt over their eyeballs. We have enough debt to cover everybody else in the world.
Yeah.
Adding to all of this, as all of the Western countries' populations age, meaning fewer people paying into the system, more people drawing services from the system, will not Europe at one point saying, hey guys, you know, hey Houston, we've got a problem?
Yeah. In fact, in many of those countries, they are looking more to private solutions too.
Okay.
Those countries have the same problems the U.S. does. You have an aging population, you don't have very many young people, they've got huge social welfare systems like we do, and clearly, I saw a study not too long ago that said the per capita unfunded liabilities in the United States is about $110,000 per American family. That means to have enough money in investments to cover Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, if they had to do the accounting just like General Motors has to, each family, each American family would have to have that much invested. And the only way the government can get money to cover that is, of course, taking it from the American families. The average American family has around $40,000. So there's no way that those programs in the long run can actually be funded. In some way, there has to be a default or a restructuring. Mm-hmm. Same problem in Europe as in the U.S.
Well, your research paper indicates that healthcare is less expensive in Europe, although it's a one-payer system.
Yes.
Now, if you take that snapshot by itself, you'd say, well, geez, this is what we should do.
Yep.
However, they are a runaway train also.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a game that they can't win unless they import a tremendous number of people who are willing to work, pay into the system, and not use the services. Okay.
Yep.
Now, we have the same problem here. The way I saw it, and please please correct me if I'm wrong, because this is for our listeners and not for me, but that if we went to a one-payer system overnight and somehow eliminated a lot of bureaucracy, we could save some money, streamline things, but that would not solve our problem. Then we would be on the same track as the other runaway trains are in Europe. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, and I don't think that would probably solve the problems overnight, because again, let's say we do that, we might cut some of the bureaucracy out of the system as far as insurance goes, maybe the 30% overhead. But again, we've got the problem of supply. We don't have that many doctors. We don't have that many facilities available here. And of course, if we had more facilities, those costs would also go down.
Yeah. Well, the solution, the long-term solution, is then what?
Free markets, if you can get to them. Again, the hodgepodge ways of doing it, which is, you know, the nibblings that are being discussed, would be things like a health savings account that would create competitive pressures, allowing people to import prescription drugs from other countries. That would create competitive pressures. One of the few things the Democratic Congress has proposed recently is allowing the government to negotiate on price for drugs, which makes sense. If you buy a ton of them, you should be able to negotiate on the price. I would certainly advocate that. Ultimately, the only real way of making it much better would be to deregulate it, allow people to buy the drugs they want to buy without going through paying a doctor $100 for a piece of paper that says you can buy it, allowing free entry into the healthcare system rather than having to go to medical school. If you want to get advice from, let's say, a PhD in biology or a nurse, why not be able to do that? Basically, just, again, a free market system where you can buy services freely from somebody else without government interference. And then, of course, well, the argument is the government always protects you. Well, sometimes it may, but at the same time, it restricts us what you're allowed to do and does create costs that are much, much higher than they would be under a regular system. And, you know, you can learn who to trust.
Well, even without a government oversight, there would still be certification organizations, yes. Colleges. Yeah. You'd have to pass, you get a diploma, yeah. You know, and still the likes of the AMA. And if,
yes, absolutely.
And if you didn't belong to any of this, well, I mean, anyone can put up a shingle,
sure,
today and
you
call
can,
themselves Dr. Schlock,
yeah,
right?
You can go do business with them if you right. want, but, you know, you're more likely to trust people that
yeah.
have gone through the regular
right.
system.
A friend of mine who has a real complaint about the insurance industry, now we may get a little off the subject here, and you tell me if I'm, you know, if we're getting too far off, is that he can't get insurance for his wife, or he was dropped, his wife was dropped because she had some medical problems. And he says that's unlike other insurance, where you can get insurance, but you just pay a little bit more, or you pay into this pool, and then everyone shares in that pool.
Mm-hmm.
It seems when it comes to medical care, you don't share in the pool, you just get dropped. So either you're healthy and have health care, health insurance, or you're sick and you don't have health. It doesn't seem to make much sense.
Yeah. In fact, I've got a friend with diabetes who probably has enough money to retire if it wasn't for the diabetes, and he gets jobs for a few months and then gets on COBRA.
Yeah.
Until, you know, 18 months the COBRA expires. Again, there's going to be problems like that. Those problems presumably could be cured through things like private charity. And beyond that, if we didn't have all the government control and restrictions, all that stuff would be so much cheaper that it wouldn't be nearly as much of an issue as
right.
it is now.
Yeah. Are there any projections on really what healthcare would cost if it was a pure private system? I mean, any wild guesstimates or anything like that? Or?
I think the only way you can get a good guess from that would be looking what the system was like back in the 50s, 40s, before we had so much interference. Now people can, you know, and again, I guess the best comparison, just because I have data on it, would be things like physician salaries, which were maybe 1/4 of what they are now. So presumably you would cut out the 30% bureaucracy that we have associated with the huge insurance system. I'm sure costs would go down to maybe 25% of what they are now. Now, one of the common bizarre arguments in healthcare is we have so much more technology now that it would increase costs.
That's correct, yeah.
Well, every other industry, technology pushes down costs. Computer prices go down every year as they get better at producing them. So, I don't think that's a very good argument. I know MRI machines are incredibly expensive if you buy them for the purposes of healthcare. Chemistry departments all over the country get them, and I think it's basically the same technology, and it's much cheaper for them to purchase them.
Okay. Basically, we had good old competition in the workplace. Everything would find its proper price. if we had a insurance industry that would play the ball game a little bit differently than it's playing now, and we wouldn't have unions, for example, or even companies that would entice employees by giving them total health care, which really fouls up the system. In other words, we're back to libertarian principles of, number one, individual responsibility, right, and a free marketplace. That is the only way long term. The European healthcare system is not our answer, is it?
No, not at all.
Even if it looks a little prettier than it is now.
In some ways, it does look a little prettier. I can't see over the long run how it would be anything but a major problem.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Well, it's 30 minutes. Do you realize we have talked for 30 minutes?
It's gone by quickly.
Okay, folks. Kirby, I want to thank you so much for being here and appreciate, again, coming out on a Sunday evening to be our guest live. I'll let you know when we get any questions, and if there's questions that I can't answer, I'll forward them on to you, okay? I want to thank you very much. And this is the, let me play our bumper song. Okay, this is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their support. We'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And don't forget to send your comments to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.